Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm your host for Breakthrough Directions, Linda Feinholz, founder of the Breakthrough Academy at BreakthroughByDesign.com, coming to you live as I do each week at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio. I'm delighted to have you with us today. Gina, my co-host, is running a little bit late. She got hooked by a matter she has to deal with, and hopefully she'll be able to join us. But I have been so excited about who I'm bringing you as the guest to today's show. I want to tell you a little bit of background about our guest. And yesterday I was flipping channels on the television, and an image came up on the screen, and I stopped there, and I was just in time to see Tom Hanks in a role with Cameron Diaz, where he was saying to her, "This is you with me," raising his hands above his head, "and this is you without me, with me, without me, with me, without me." And I started laughing because today's guest, Casey Eberhardt, brings to me the exact same feeling. There is the world with Casey and the world without Casey. There is the world of speaking events and driving passion and success through speaking and inspiring people and helping people build their businesses, and that's the world with Casey Eberhardt. And I saw that image and thought to myself, I'm so looking forward to bringing all of you Casey Eberhardt. He's an amazing, engaging, intelligent entrepreneur who, in his own right, has built and sold multi-million dollar businesses and is now an international speaker, an author, a business strategist, specializing in creating results. And we have so much we're going to talk about today. Casey, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Linda. I am so thrilled and excited to be here this morning. I don't even know what to say. I've had about an entire pot of coffee, and I woke up in a fiery mood this morning. So I'm just thrilled and honored to be here. And, you know, before we get started, I just want to say thank you to both you and Gina for doing what you do, because without people providing a platform to get messages out, communication would be the same way we were back in the days of the Pony Express. So good for you guys for providing a platform to get your message out.
My delight to provide the platform and to have you with us. And part of what we're going to be talking about today for our listeners is this idea of all the ways that digital media is now enabling us to get the word out, to create multiple different platforms so that we and our expertise and authority can actually be known, touch more people, make a bigger difference in the world. So, Casey, I gave people a little bit of a taste of your background, but I would love to roll back time and have people understand that while today you're inspiring people from standing before them on the stage, you're one of those people who was in the trenches of business, really figuring out how do we create a business that's successful and profitable, turning it around to the point of actually being able to grow it, sell, and sell it. And you've done that multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is I don't know any different. I know that sounds kind of a silly, a little bit of a silly answer, but, you know, let me take you back to one of the most pivotal moments in my business career. I actually have a couple of career moments that forever changed my life. And the first one happened when I was just 5 years old. And when I was 5 years old, my grandfather in Fowler, Colorado, which is not even a one-light town, it is a pizza, beer joint, and an insurance agency town. That's it. And it was out in the middle of Colorado, and when I was five, my grandfather, who was probably one of the best examples of a bootstrapping entrepreneur, he had come out of the Great Depression, and he realized that in order to succeed in his world, he needed multiple streams of income. And of course, at five, I had no idea what that meant. However, there was one particular day where I got on a tractor with my grandfather, and he started driving me out past his rental house that was on his property, his Model A restoration company garage that was there. He had a tire shop on site. We drove past his antique store, and antique store in those parts is just really a garage sale where they sell a bunch of crap and put antique store sign on it. We drove through a pasture of his cattle, gas wells, oil wells, water wells, and in the middle of this field, he shut the tractor off and became dead silent. And at that moment, he said, "Casey, I'm going to tell you one thing, and if you just get this for the rest of your life, everything will make sense." I'm like, "Okay, granddaddy, what's happening?" And he said this sentence to me, and I remember literally, Linda, it's one of my first memories. He says, "Always give the customer way more value than they ever expect to receive, and everything else will be okay." And I, of course, had no idea what that meant, but I did know this, that we were going back to the antique store, and I got anything I sold, I got to keep the money for. So my first example, and this is so important for people to grasp, I think we all have defining moments, but two ladies walked into that antique store that day. I could pick them out of a crowd today, out of millions and millions of people, and they bought two old antique insulators, which are these big, unbreakable pieces of glass that used to sit on the top of electric poles in the Midwest. $2. I'll skip a whole scene here, but really what ended up happening was I had to give them more value for that $2 than they ever expected to receive. And so the way I did that was I put them in a box, I put them in a bag. I walked those things out to those ladies, and I opened the car door for the driver. She got in and was like, "Oh, thank you, Sonny, you know, blah, 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 that whole thing, you're a whippersnapper." I walked around to the other side, and instead of just handing the bag to the lady in the driver's or passenger side, I actually opened up the back seat, put the box in the back seat, and seat belted it in for safe travel. And then I opened the door for the lady in the passenger side, and for that, she tipped me $20. So I sold a $2 item, and I made a tip of $20 just by going the extra mile. And that is when I realized that business was awesome, and that's how I live my life with that same philosophy, is always do more than you're ever asked, and everything will also be okay. I just took that premise and built several businesses that we ended up selling. I ended up working as a general manager for an amusement store, an amusement park up in the Pacific Northwest, and I had another defining moment where I was fairly ballsy with the new owners, but it worked to my advantage because I knew how to network with the highest level of person in the room, and that was by seeing how to add more value to them than before they walked into the room. And so, you know, you walk into a meeting, and it's so important today, you walk into a meeting, if you're going to spend the time networking, you're going to spend the time building relationships, you're going to spend and expend the energy that it takes to be in the room, always go for the most influential person in the room and see how you can provide them the most value without asking anything in return first. Basically, to make a long story short, sold the amusement park to Six Flags. Oh, shoot, I'm not supposed to say that contractually. Sold the amusement park to a large conglomerate amusement park association. Trademarks included. I worked in the movie business. I took the same philosophy of networking, relationship building, adding value to the movie industry. Ended up winning an Oscar in 1997 for a movie called Being John Malkovich, where I was the line producer, which means I was the money guy. And from there, retired, sold, and from that point, I started an equipment rental company to rent film and television equipment, sold that. I've owned multiple businesses. And really, at the end of the day, Linda, all it really comes down to is figuring out what the problem is that your customer is having and providing them a solution and giving them that solution with more value than they ever expect to receive. And then it's very simple from that point forward. It's lather, rinse, repeat.
And one of the key elements that's embedded throughout all of your stories is how you build relationships. And I think that's so critical. There isn't a single element of business that isn't about how we create relationship, how we create relationship with our prospective customer or client, with those that we are already having.
They have the money.
Exactly. Well, also with our vendors, with our colleagues, with joint venture partners and so on, it's so much about understanding what the other person needs and building a relationship with them so that they know you know them and understand what they value.
Right. I mean, Linda, here's the thing. I mean, you and I are friends. We talk about this stuff all the time. You know, it's actually kind of funny. You're one of the few people that I sometimes wish we would sit record. I mean, sometimes we actually just kind of sit and brainstorm and hit record on the on our phone, which, by the way, is a whole other scary thing, considering back in the 80s we all thought that cell phones were just these giant bricks, if anything, reserved for the rich. And now they're literally locking the doors on our home, turning on our crock pots, and doing all the other kind of stuff. But, you know, you brought up a really good point, and that's the value of a relationship. Relationships, I mean, I'm just a revenue guy. I'm just a money guy, right? So I understand that the game of money, exchanging hands, is done by value. So I just look for and seek out people that have money and influence. And I understand that there are different ways to go about this, and I understand that there will be people listening to this going, oh, but you're just trying to get where the people with the money are. You're just trying to go with the kill or the whale or whatever. It's not about that. I understand that the people and the relationships that have influence over a buying group or over a group of people that can recommend me plays into the law of multiplicity, doing something one time and having it spread the message to multiple people. So, you know, it's I believe in my core that the relationship that I have with other members of the human race, it's not that I'm all that fancy, I'm not really all that smart. All I've really figured out how to do is find somebody that has influence and figure out how to benefit their life before I ever ask or need anything from them. And frankly, it's turned out to be a pretty good model, because instead of, you know, let me back up. Let me give you a great example, and I'll keep this really, really brief. Is here's the difference. Let's take Hollywood, for example. I coach a group of actors here in Hollywood. And when they got me, the first thing they all said is they all got together and they brought me in and they said, hey, we're not getting enough auditions, we're not getting enough parts, we're not getting access to the casting directors and producers that can make the hiring decisions. And I said, well, let's just take a look at you guys right here. I said, what do you all have in common? Well, this is all a group of best friends. And there was about 10 of them at the time. I said, you guys all expend your energy in your networking time working and being around other actors that are out of work. I said, and you can tell me that, you know, you get leads from each other and you'll go on one audition and someone will tell about the other audition and there's 9 people there, and that's great, except that you're not going where the person who has the influence is. So when you start networking, if you would just network with casting directors and directors and producers, expend the same amount of energy, figure out how you can help their film get further along in the process without you being asked to be in it, you'll win every time. And so we really started focusing on that. You know, you and I share a mutual friend in Maurice Domino. Maurice and I just went to lunch yesterday, and he said to me something that struck a chord with me, and you know, we can maybe play on this for the next topic, is he said to me, he said, Casey, he goes, you know what's really interesting about you? He goes, you are a speaker that works more as a speaker than almost anybody I know, and you're friends with all the speakers, but the reality is you don't network and hang out with all the other speakers. And I said, you're right, because they don't hire me. They may give me some leads and some events and that kind of thing, but the reality is speakers don't hire me. Who hires me are show producers, heads of associations, heads of sales organizations, CEOs that want to increase the value of their digital online presence, so on and so forth. So if I'm going to network and I'm going to look to see how I bring value and how I can bring my network to serve somebody else, to me, it just doesn't make sense for me to hang out with my peers as much as it does recognizing that there are people that can hire me or that can put me in front of their groups of people or radio shows or presentations, so on and so forth. To me, that's where my value is better spent or my time is better spent.
That makes complete sense. You model it. I would love to expand on this just a little bit. I would love if you could give a couple of examples. Let's use the Hollywood example and an example of how someone literally would go out and not ask for the role, but bring value.
Okay, so, you know what, can I switch the example? Hollywood's going to be a little esoterical since this is a business show. Let me use a business example.
Absolutely.
Can I do that?
Absolutely.
And if you want me to use a Hollywood example, I will. You can just change out players.
No, you and I know that you've got 40 examples, so go ahead and use a business example,
yeah.
And then I'm
so here's
the one
to
get behind it.
So here's the deal. I am a speaker. I don't make any bones about it. I spend the vast majority of my time on stage promoting products, events, concepts, theories, so on and so forth.
And by the way, Casey, this is really important for people to understand. You do not run around the country saying, please just hire me to do keynotes. When you are on stage, you have a purpose for being on stage, and that includes selling. It's important for people
absolutely
to understand.
Absolutely. I am very, very fortunate, and I don't for one second ever wake up and not just thank whoever there is above me who's given me the opportunity to not only sell from the front of the room where I make a living as well as the promoters make a living, but also I get to be brought in as just kind of a keynote guy to give my theories and opinions. So I'm a really good blend. But I absolutely sell from the front of the room. I make no bones about it. I think I provide exceptional value. And by doing that and always keeping the audience in mind, they choose to become a part of my network. And that's really how I look at it is on some level, all I'm asking people to do is to commoditize our relationship, really. And people that have invested with me in my products and my services and my coaching and my strategy tend to get way more value than they ever expect to receive because I tend to promote them to each other and promote them to the network of people that I already have just because they all kind of have that same philosophy, or I've helped train that into the philosophy. So getting back to the example, here's the deal. So I'm a speaker. And there's an event happening in Los Angeles by a promoter who I actually really like his stuff. I think he's an amazing guy. And I am never asked to be a speaker on his stage, primarily because we have a similar philosophy, and I think that he gets a little too there might be a little too much of an overlap for him. Okay? Now I'm a speaker. I get paid when I speak on stage. So here's what I do. Every time his event comes to town, I spend a few $100. First off, I buy a ticket to the event, and most of the time people are like, why would you buy a ticket to somebody else's event? One, because I like him and I like the event. I want to support him in the event. Two, the network at the event is awesome. But most importantly, I want to show him by example that I'm willing to promote his show and his event more than the other speakers that are there that are just about them and themselves. So what happens? Right now, none of those speakers are being asked to speak at his event. I just got called yesterday. I'm going to be a speaker at his event probably next year. But that didn't come from me being great. It didn't come from me being salesy. What came from every time his event comes to town, I promote that event and promote him more than the speakers that are actually asked to speak at the event. Because of that, I can pick up the phone and have him answer the phone anytime I need. I can get him to do pretty much anything I need him to do because I've added more value to him than I've ever asked. I've never asked to be a speaker on his stage. I've never indicated that it was something I really wanted to do. It's just you got to kind of take a step ahead before you get asked to do stuff. And I think that's where people get lost, is that they don't understand that by going the extra mile first, is it always going to pay off? No. Don't do it for the payoff. Do it for the build of the – it's almost like a relationship bank and depositing credits into that, right? You and I met at a David Fagan event. David is another great example. Right? David has become a good friend of mine, not because I make him a bunch of money from speaking from stage. David and I have become really good friends because he knows that if he calls me and he has a book launch or he has an event, he knows that if he calls me or shoots me a message and says, hey, do you think you could promote this, that I'm going to put the promotion machine on overdrive more than his own staff. And by doing that, it's depositing into the relationship bank. Do I sometimes need to take a withdrawal out of that bank? Sometimes. But it's about spending the time with people that have the ability to influence others. So sometimes you and I have joked, and I've said this before, that I don't want the golden egg, and I don't really want the golden goose. What I want is the golden egg that lays the golden goose, or that has the golden goose that lays the golden egg. If that makes sense. I may need another golden something in there.
You need to start back up at the top of the beanstalk again.
Exactly. I am always seeking out, in any event I'm at, any place I am, I'm seeking out the highest person in the room from an influence standpoint. So, you know, when I go to a live event, when I go to a live event, I'm looking for five people. It's the same five people at every event. I'm looking for the speaker. Why? They talk from stage. They have a microphone. They mention me from the front of the room. Bam, I win. Two, the organizers. Why I would spend time networking with people in the room trying to randomly bump into the person I want to know seems to me like a colossal waste of time. When if I figure out what the organizer wants and needs, whether it's carrying books from her car or his car into the event versus, you know, promoting their event, whatever, why not just go to them and say, hey, I'm looking for the person in the room that sells insurance, or I'm looking for the realtor in the room, and let them do the introduction. Now I've got a third-party endorsement before the relationship ever starts. And then the other three people I call the yap jobs, right? Yap job one, yap job two, and yap job three. I'm looking around the room. I'm looking who's got the influence, who's holding court, who's telling jokes, who's got people around them listening rather than them doing just all the talking. But who are people listening to? Those are the folks that I tend to gravitate towards, and then I just sit and listen and figure out what it is I can do or who in my network I can introduce them to that will help them produce exceptional results. And if I can do that over and over and over again, I win every time.
And it's completely – it's one of the most powerful approaches I've ever seen in a networking setting. I've been to many of them, and I've watched you. And I know that you often puzzle people because you're usually found – seated at the back of the room, not at the front. You don't usually have a name tag on. And when you stand up, you don't say I.
No, I mean, you know, this is one of the biggest things that I can offer. And this is, if you guys take anything away from this, I mean, we'll have tons of golden nuggets, but this is, to me, one of the most powerful things. And I don't even, I'm really good about giving credit where it's due, and I just can't think of where I learned this. So at this point, I'll just say that I made it up. But there is somebody that taught it to me. I just can't think who it is. And that's this. When you go around the room and you're given 30 seconds to stand up and give your 30-second commercial, put yourself in the audience perspective. First off, if you're number 30 in line, you're not listening to the first 29 because you're nervous and trying to think about what you're going to say. Then you get up and say your commercial, and then from 31 past that, you're not listening because you're like, whew, that's done and over with. And at the end of the day, nobody is making any business from that, right? And there's no business that's transacted from that ever in any room, no matter what. Most people don't know how to do a commercial. They rattle on too long, or they don't know what to say, or they don't know how to pique interest, and all you're doing is you're bored, you're nervous, you're hungry, so on and so forth. It is, in my opinion, at a networking event, one of the most colossal, useless waste of time unless you figure out how to make it work to your advantage. So let me tell you how to do that. Let's say that you sit in the room and you think that the speaker in the room is the most powerful person in the room, which they are. Here's my approach. When it gets time for me to stand up and do my commercial, I stand up. I don't go with a business card. I don't even talk about me. I try not to even say anything about me at an event. So I'll stand up, and let's say the speaker is Linda, right? I would stand up, and I would say, you guys, I'm just here to observe. One of the most powerful speakers I've ever had the privilege of being in a room with is Linda Feinholz, and she's going to get up and talk to you about really how to break through your inner child and your inner problems to get you through to the other side. So all I can tell you in my little 30 seconds here is it is so important that when she talks, put your crap down, get your listening ears on, take a lot of notes, and go connect with her afterwards. Bam, and I sit down. Well, a lot of people will say to me afterwards, going, why didn't you utilize that time to promote yourself? You know, this is the time where you get to get up. What I've really done is I've picked out Linda as somebody I want to do business with. I have just leveraged that 30 seconds to cement Linda in wanting to work with me. I don't really – this sounds terrible to say, but – I don't really care about the other people in the room because I've identified Linda as the person who has influence over the room. I want to figure out how to make her be able to influence the room because that puts my value higher with her. If I do that, all the people in the room that listen to her, now will listen to her give me an endorsement more than myself giving myself an endorsement from the front of the room.
Giant gold nugget, put a frame around it, tack it to the wall, put it on your desk. And building on that, I know we have people listening saying, wait a minute, weren't you going to talk all about digital assets, et cetera? Folks, this is the groundwork for now
talking about
how to take it into this world of online media, the digital technology, and so on. You need to understand this background because now we can talk about what it is to build digital assets that are of value, that bring you leads and cement relationships.
Well, look, it's the same thing. There are four primary areas that I believe in business must be mastered. And it's really about mastering all four of these people, all four of these sections. And it's very simple. It's technology, strategy, mindset, which is behavior, and a network. Right? If you can interlock those four categories together, you've got a powerful, powerful set of skills. So a network, we just kind of talked about building out a network. We'll take it to a digital space here in a second. Mindset or behaviors, we talked a little bit about always give customers more value than they ever expect to receive, and being able to think things through from a higher 60,000-foot viewpoint versus trying to run around and book a home party for your business at a chamber or think that somebody's going to sign up to sell their house at a chamber event, so on and so forth. Right? Then we have a strategy. Right? What do we really want? What we really want to be able to do is provide value to the people in our network. Right? And so the piece that's left is, in my opinion, the easiest piece because it changes all the time, so you don't ever have to even get used to it, and that's the technology piece. Right? So the technology piece is really the how do we create a digital asset, and by digital asset, what I mean is, look, here's the deal. Oh my gosh, I'm getting fired up. Look, here's the deal. Most people, I believe, do the right things in the wrong order. Okay, so let's just take Facebook, for example, because right now we're in the age of Facebook. Okay, 10 years from now, Facebook may be the old Friendster, but for right now, Facebook is huge. I watch people all day long go on Facebook, hey, go buy my book. Hey, sign up for my insurance. Sell your house with me. Come to my store. All of that stuff. Well, in the world of Facebook, that time that you took to do that is gone, never to be returned. Nobody ever sifts back to what you posted in 2011 to click on a link to go buy a book. Those messages are going on a newsfeed that fast. That message lasts 10 minutes at best. However, if you were to write a blog post and review a book, and talk about why you like the book, what you learned from the book, so on and so forth, and you drop that into a blog post, that blog post becomes an asset. And by asset, it's permanent. It never goes away. It never loses its value. And in fact, the way the search engine algorithms work, that blog post actually gains value over time. Now, in Facebook, you promote the blog post, not the book. Now that 10-minute time is promoting an asset that is going to sit there, and you can continuously promote the same asset rather than promoting something that your message is gone in 5 minutes. And then, you know, I'll take a page out of Gary Vaynerchuk, who I'm a huge fan of. Linda, you know this, a huge fan of. He's all about value, 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 ask. Value, 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 ask, right? The more value you give, the higher the influence you have because people don't think you're just being they're sold to all the time. And then, bam, you can ask them to participate in something. Click a link here, like my fan page, like my YouTube account, watch this video, buy my book, buy my services, hire me to talk to you for a half hour, so on and so forth. It's about using technology to your advantage. And having a blog, then it becomes about the law of multiplicity. This is a David Fagan kind of concept. At least he's the one that brought it to my attention. And that is by using technology and really understanding that creating assets or blog posts or websites or mobile phone apps or whatever, leveraging the technology with the right strategy, the right mindset, and the right network is key. I mean, Linda, you and I both, we live in this internet space at times. You know, I was joking with a friend of mine that next week the Internet Marketers Cruise is going on. And I laugh whenever the Internet Marketing Cruise goes on because it's 500 to 1,000 of the best and the brightest internet marketers on the planet. And they all get on a ship and they go away for 10 days. It's hilarious to me. It's like, it's literally like driving in Los Angeles during the Oscars. Like, there's no cars on the road. There's no ads. There's no launches. There's no big anything going on because they're all gone. Right? But what they do have is they still make money because they have messages and assets out there that are continuously producing them results, which are leads and opportunities. And that works for offline businesses as well. You know, if you're a roofing company, for example, I don't know, I always use a roofing company as an example, and the funny thing is I know nothing about roofing. But look, here's the deal. Most people will go, well, why would a roofer need to be online? Right? It's word-of-mouth referral, right? Well, I got news for you. If your business model right now is you feel that you get most of your business by word-of-mouth referral, congratulations, you are going to be in a very big problem in the next few years because business is done really one of two ways in today's marketplace, word-of-mouth referral and validation of those referrals on the Internet, or Internet and word-of-mouth referrals that are validated on the Internet. So, look, here's the deal. Linda, you and I both know this. As a speaker, if somebody recommends me as a speaker, somebody's going to go Google me. If they don't find me and they find all my competitors, I lose out, right? And you guys, if you're listening to this, put yourself in this position, right? If somebody recommends a doctor for a vasectomy or an OBGYN to you, are you just going to take that word-of-mouth referral and call them up and go sit in their chair? No, you're going to go Google them. If they don't have any internet presence, you're going to find their competitors. You're going to find the competitor that's done a ton of internet content with blogs and videos and articles, and they're contributing authors to this and that, and they're speaking all over. That is who you're going to trust. It has nothing to really do with who's the better doctor. It's who has grabbed the most internet marketplace. So all of you out there that are saying, well, my business works on word-of-mouth referral, I assure you, here's what you do. Go Google yourself and see what comes up, and I assure you that your biggest competitors are the ones that are coming up, if they're smart. And I tell you that in that you are losing business by using the word-of-mouth referral marketing strategy every single time. Whew, I'm sorry, Linda. I may have got a little off topic there.
I love it. Like, no, you're not off track at all because, Casey, I just had a meeting last week with one of my clients, one of my one-on-one private clients, and we were looking at the data of where her phone is ringing from, where are those people coming from. And let me just say, she is not in the restaurant business, and 60% of her inbound calls come because people found her on Yelp.
Yep.
And she's not in the restaurant.
And Yelp is, and Yelp, I don't have a problem saying it. I think Yelp is one of the most horrible, awful organizations on the planet. However, what they have been able to do is brilliant. They've provided a platform for the social marketplace to give input on businesses.
That's right. And think about this for a moment. She doesn't spend money to put her own marketing on Yelp. What she does is with each client, she says, if you were satisfied, would you please go, you know, give me a review on Yelp? And her clients start at $3,000 per project.
Absolutely. And if you use Yelp, you guys, what Linda just said is actually a major violation of Yelp, so please don't say to your clients to go give you a review on Yelp. They will shut you down and it will be awful. So,
good.
Linda, don't say out
loud.
No,
and I would tell her to stop doing it.
Yeah, it has to be natural and organic. If they see too many reviews coming in, they shut it down. That's a whole other topic. But here's the deal. Let's go back to the movie business, Linda, for a second.
Yep.
First off, I'll let you guys in on a couple of little Hollywood secrets. You can always tell how good a movie is by the date that the thing gets released on the premiere. So here's the deal. If a movie comes out on a Friday and you hear about the premiere happening on Wednesday night before the Friday, I assure you the movie will last for about a minute and a half on screen because it's terrible. Okay? However, if a movie comes out on Friday and you see it in your entertainment or Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, and it comes out 3 weeks, the premiere is 3 weeks ahead of the movie, it's Oscar worthy. And the reason that is that we want the premieres to start the word of mouth buzz, right? So we bring all of these press people in, we sit them in the theater, and we run the film for them. If it's crap, we don't want them to go out and talk about the movie to all their friends or the people they have influence over, because they're going to tell them it's crap. We want to basically sucker them into the theater, let them buy jujubes for 3 days, and call it a day. However, if it's great, we want the word of mouth buzz to take a long time. So we put the premiere out 3 weeks, 4 weeks out, so that we can get those press folks in there, have them watch the movie, and start writing reviews on it. Now all of a sudden the buzz starts, right? Now, Linda, let me ask you. I mean, you're a movie going person. I'm a movie going person. Well, very rarely. But here's the deal. If you watch ads on TV and you're just bombarded with ads on TV, you basically the studio is trying to convince you that if your friends hate the movie, it's still good, and it's still good no matter what. It's completely trying to paint the movie in the best possible way it can. What has more influence? A trailer, a reviewer, or your best girlfriend that just saw the movie?
Oh,
best girlfriend that just saw the movie every single time.
Exactly.
And if your best girlfriend on the planet is different than what you think is the ad, you're going to go Google it and look and see what other of your friends say, not what other reviewers say. We live in a society today where friends telling friends about products, goods, and services have more influence. The more influence you have over your friends, the more valuable you are to an advertiser, to a marketer, to somebody else. So this all ties in together. If you create great content online, provide exceptional value to people, and you capture more and more of that space online, you have, just by the nature of that, more influence than somebody that doesn't. And if you can backtrack and understand that from a point of view that the most valuable asset you really have to sell, regardless of what product, good, or service you think you sell, is really your value is your network. Your value is your influence and your ability to influence influencers. That's it. That's why one of the biggest things I see when I go into companies from a strategic level is a lot of times businesses rely on one guy or one woman. You know, Steve Jobs, responsible for Apple. Bill Gates, Microsoft. You start tying one person to a company, what happens if that person gets hit by a bus? We got to get the focus shift to how do we get the internet and the digital world all talking about us and providing that space that when somebody does Google us, we occupy tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of space. Should be doing radio shows and guest blogging and writing a book. I mean, and if we have time, Linda, talk to me about, let's talk about how we take a message one time and we can repurpose that same piece of content and spread it to a gazillion times. You know, one of our other good friends is a guy named Cedric Harris. And Cedric Harris is probably one of the top internet marketers I have ever been privileged to know. He is unbelievable. You can like him, dislike him, I don't really care, but he taught me one thing very early on. And he just said one simple phrase at a workshop we were doing together, and I just went, holy Moses. And he said, I market like Coolio. Now, Coolio is a rap singer, and that was a few years ago, so I might bring this a little bit more close to today's marketplace, and I literally try to market like the singer Pitbull, right? And people think, well, you don't even listen to Pitbull. I wouldn't be able to pick this dude out of a crowd. Anyway, I don't know what he really looks like, but here's what I know. I know that this dude is a guest singer on everything from Taylor Swift to Eminem to Kesha. He is like a duet partner to a ton of different top-level A-list acts. By doing that, he is exposing himself to all of Taylor Swift's audience and Kesha's audience. By the way, those are two very, very different audiences. So he, instead of trying to go be his own singer, he has been able to leverage himself into other people's marketplace and expose his message or his brand or his own album by leveraging the networks of others. Right? I think this isn't all that complicated, and maybe it's just because I live in this space and I'm always looking for ways to do that. I have a different viewpoint, but I mean, look, here's the deal, guys. If you are going around to a Chamber of Commerce or a networking event, here's a suggestion for you. Rather than thinking that you're going to sell your stuff to them, which they're never going to buy, and all I have to do to prove that is say, give me a time when you were at a networking event and somebody handed you a check or a credit card that you actually took and actually took business happen. The likelihood of that occurring is almost zero. Everyone says, oh, but it's a relationship. We're networking. It's about the relationship. BS. It is about business. So if you want to leverage these little networking groups and BNI and LATIP and Team and Chambers of Commerce and Rotary and Kiwanis and Lions and all of these, let me tell you how to do that right now that will make you a ton of money and create a massive amount of influence you have. Instead of going to Starbucks and having a coffee with these folks, get them on a Google Hangout or go take your video camera, go over and interview them about their business. Not about your business, about their business. Ask them how they got started, what did they like, what did they not like, so on and so forth. Get that video, drop it in YouTube, put a link to their website, put a link to your website. Say, hey, if you want to get in touch with Bob the Roofer or Chad the Leg Maker or whatever, get in touch with me, and I'll be sure to get you in touch with them. You put a little call to action, which is, hey, what do you want them to do? Call me in this case, and I'll put you in touch with them. Then you take that YouTube video and you drop it in a blog post. Same thing. Now you take that blog post link that you've talked about, Bob the Roofer, and you send it to Bob, and you say, hey, Bob, I don't know if you remember that little video we did, but here's a blog post I did on it. If you want to go promote it to promote your business, go do it. You've made it about them. Is Bob higher, less, or more likely to promote that link to the blog post? It's huge. It's all about him. It's about third-party verification and testimonials. Bob's going to run around promoting your video and your blog because it makes him look good. Lather, rinse, repeat. Do that to everybody in your networking event. Now, watch what happens. Somebody looks up Encino Roofer, you come up. Someone looks for Encino Insurance Agent, you come up. Somebody looks for Encino Speaker, you come up. All of a sudden, you're everywhere. You're the virtual pit bull in this case.
You know, Casey, this is Gina.
Good morning, Gina.
Hello there. And, you know, online, this has an even bigger implication that most people aren't even aware of. For about the last year on Google, things have worked very differently in terms of how sites get ranked. If you do exactly what you just shared, and people then click through, come over to your website one time, they leave. That has a major effect on where your site now ranks in search. Here's what happens. When you've got all these other people sending their readers, sending their traffic off to your site one time, if they happen to be logged into their Google account when they got there, and because of the fact that YouTube now has Google Plus comments on only, most of these people are going to be logged into Google, it will cause your site to show up higher up in their search engine rankings forever. It's bigger than that because it's not just their search engine rankings. It affects the search engine rankings for their friends and their friends' friends three levels deep. Anyone connected to them on Facebook, Google+, Twitter, and Gmail will all see your site show up on the first page of Google just because that person happened to visit you after watching that video or reading that blog post from the roofer.
Absolutely. And, Gina, you bring up such a valuable point. And I let's go a little bit deeper from just a technical and a strategic place of view. everybody, some of the older generation will say things like, technology scares me, I don't understand social media, I don't want to be on social media. I'm not even going to address that because those are folks that I can't teach them a new thing. However, I use the browser. Jeez, I use Chrome as my browser. What most people don't realize is that when I do a search in Google using Chrome, it is doing exactly what Gina says, you guys. It is pulling up sites by and from people in my network that have visited that based on their social interaction. And if you ever want to test and see how different this is, go Google yourself in Chrome and look at where you come up. And then if you want to see what happens when somebody who's not connected to you social media-wise, what they see, in the upper right corner, there's two little boxes. If you hover over them, it'll say hide personal results. Click that box that says hide personal results, and it removes from your search engine the rankings based on the social interaction of your network. I can promise each and every one of you within the sound of my voice that is the more important search engine to be working off of, because those are true search results. You need to figure out how to get those folks interacting with you so that you show up in their networks, in their search engine rankings as well. But Gina's exactly right. If somebody's logged into Google and they're in their G+ account or they're in their Facebook account or whatever, these search engines, guys, they're looking for your best friend telling you that the movie is awesome, because you have influence. So they're going to take somebody who has a bigger audience, a bigger voice, and say, hey, we're going to weight their voice a little bit more than somebody that doesn't have a voice at all. It's brilliant.
And we promised that we'd come back to this topic of how you repurpose your message, and I think this is the optimum place for us to talk about it, because we're talking about all these various platforms. And so, Casey, if someone were starting nowadays, I know, you know, so much keeps changing in technology that we continuously feel like we're beginners. If someone were to put themselves into beginner's mind now with all the changes that Google has put underway and so on, and right here, right now today, put a plan of action in place for how to start creating digital assets, how should they prioritize what they're doing?
It's going back to technology. Technology has got to be first. I just believe that, because I would rather have somebody do a crappy blog post than a brilliant Facebook post, right? Because a crappy blog post is going to actually stay there for longer. So let's start with the basics. I don't have a website. I don't have anything. I don't know where to even begin. You're crazy, Casey. I don't even know what you want me to do, right? You have to start producing content that stays somewhere, right? Now, in full transparency, I'm the CEO of an organization called DNet, and we are a community blog, essentially. We're set up much like the Huffington Post, where we have multiple people adding content to our site all day long. Because of that, we're more powerful as a group, or the site is more powerful as a site, because you have a ton of different people promoting content on that site. So you can come in. It's not expensive at all to be a part of the community. It's like $40 is our starting package. And you can start adding content to the site. And I always tell people, look, when you say to me, I don't know what to write, here's the first thing I have clients do. I say, I want you to write me an email, and I want you to give me the 10 questions that you are asked every single day that you are sick and tired of answering. How much is it? How does it work? What do I get with this package? What's your return policy? What's your guarantee? Those kind of things. And then I want you to write an answer to each of those. You've just written 10 different blog posts, because it has to be one thought, one post. So instead of doing 10 frequently asked questions on a page, which Google has no idea how to file that, you do one question per blog post. How much is it? You take that blog post, you write out the blog post, you drop it into a content distribution network like DNet. It lives there forever. Now you have an asset that will stay there forever. And now when somebody calls you and says, hey, how much is it to have the side of my house re-sited? You can go, you know what, let me send you over a video on that, or let me send you a link to a blog post where I answer that exact question. If you still have any other questions, give me a shout. I've just got some time back because I'm leveraging that asset. Okay, so I start with something like DNet. Second, you must, and did I say must, have a website that is not crap. And I don't know how else to say that other than to just be brutally honest. You know, and I'll give you an example, and then I know I'll be quiet here in a second. I had a potential client that wined and dined me, flashed around all this money, told me how brilliant he was. He had a great concept for a website. Now, the three of us on this phone call understand technology, understand the cost of generating and creating technology from a technical side. This guy's website was around a $15,000 website for what he wanted to do and what his dreams and aspirations were for what this would produce. Day before he signs the contract, he calls me up and he says, oh, I just want to let you know, I found somebody on Fiverr to build my website. Okay? So legit companies are telling him it's going to be about 15 grand. He goes to something like Fiverr and has them spend $5 to make what he thinks in his mind, he just saved $14,995, and he's clicking his heels like he's going back to Kansas. Now, he just contacted me on New Year's Day, and literally his text was like, I obviously effed this up. I want to do it right. When can we get on the phone and talk? Now, the real question is, do I talk to him? Right? For me, he's not going to really be a good client, because if I'm competing with somebody that's going to try that at every point, I'm not really interested. But it goes to show you that technology is your website. If your website is not producing results, it's not seen by the search engines, you've done it in a template, you're paying somebody else to put a template site together, I'm sorry, you just make it more difficult for you to be found. And I could just go on a whole nother tirade about that.
Great. And so I know people are going to have some questions, so I've got more questions I want to ask you, but before we go there, if you want to get in touch with Casey and get his brain on your business, the place to go is www.connectwithcasey.com. And you can find that link in the show notes as well. Casey, we talked a bit about social media. We've talked about website. When you come up to the high level and you're thinking strategically, for instance, if you have a business that has thought of themselves as an offline business, one of the key mistakes they're making is not understanding that they must have presence online. And there's one thing that I think you and I have both talked about, which is we think we know who our buyers are right now, but our buyers in a few years are the people who are in their late teens right now who live online. They live their breath online.
I have a focus group that I run every piece of technology, everything through, and I use them as my mentors. And I say this from stage, and people think I've lost every cell of logic in my brain. I connect with, build relationships with, find out how the group of 15-year-olds buy today. Because here's the reality. Think of the 15-year-old in your life right now, your neighbor, your son, your daughter, your nephew, the person that rips the flowers out of your pots in the front of your house. Those 15-year-olds, we have 1,000 days, folks. That's it. 1,000 days until they get credit cards and they make buying decisions. And right now, the 15-year-olds are influencing their parents. So is it smarter to go after trying to sell things to people that are so hell-bent on only buying things with cash and coupons at a grocery store, or go where the influence is, right? I mean, at this point, the 15-year-olds think all of us that use email are crazy. They're like, that is so archaic. We use Vine to communicate.
And that's this year. Who knows what it's going to be next year?
Absolutely. I mean, here's the deal. I work with a lot of folks from the older folks. Right, and one of the things that they almost always say to me on a personal level is, I wish I had a closer relationship with my grandkids. I hear that all the time. I say, great, how do you try to communicate with your grandkids? Well, I send them a birthday card. Once in a while I try to call them. They don't ever call me back. And I'm like, great, take out your phone right now. Let's text them right this second. Let's text your grandkid. And they're like, that's so impersonal. I say, you want to communicate with your grandkid or not? Get out your phone. Text your grandkid and see what happens. Within seconds, the grandkid is texting back, almost always. And tears roll down their eyes because they finally have figured out how to crack the communication nut. Right? They've cracked the code. You got to communicate where your customer is, not where you are. So it might be a little uncomfortable to do a blog post. It might be a little uncomfortable to get a website built. It might be a little uncomfortable to jump on Twitter. That's okay. You can either continue to do what you're doing today, and generating the exact same results that you're getting only from the last 3 or 4 months, because technology is changing, or you can figure out how to go to where your customers, your prospects, your potential clients are, and communicate the way they communicate. When I hear a group of 15-year-olds tell me literally that none of them have an email account, as a marketer that markets via email, that scares the bejesus out of me. Because
right,
we have a lot
means,
of people.
Every single person.
There's a lot of people spending a lot of time.
All of,
yeah.
Sorry, you were saying a lot of people.
We have a lot of people spending a lot of time trying to build email lists. And I think there's value in that. Don't get me wrong. But if you're spending all your time and energy trying to build an email list, and then you go talk to your 15-year-old grandkid that won't answer your phone but will only answer you via text and won't answer you via email, and you text them and you say, hey, I have a poem I want to get to you. How do I get this poem to you? And they tell you, put it on video and send it to me in a 6-second vine. You better be listening to that. Those are those kids are the generation that will have more money and more influence than ever before, folks. It's so important. Figure out how to sell to a 15-year-old today, and 3 years from now, you'll never have a need or a want for business again. It's just that's just the bottom line.
I know a whole bunch of our audience is thinking to themselves, okay, how do I avoid doing any business with anybody who's 25 and under and just do business with those who are, you know.
Hire them. Hire a 20-year-old to communicate with them.
Exactly.
I get it. Look, I have a 16-year-old nephew that is, by all accounts, crazy. Right? But out of everybody in my family, I have the closest relationship with him. Why? Because I know how to send him a Vine. I know how to find him on Facebook and shoot him a private message on Facebook. I know how to text him and get a response. Everyone else is running around going, he's not calling, he's not showing up when he's supposed to, blah, blah, blah. So they call me to find out where the hell he is. And I can get a message. I'm like, dude, your mom's calling you, where are you? He's like, oh, I'm just down the street, tell her to come outside. I text his mom back, hey, Dez, go outside, he's right outside in your driveway. I mean, if you don't want to communicate with the 15-year-olds, I don't know what to tell you. Keep going to a chamber of commerce. But here, I'll leave you with this. Look, here's the deal. Let's just break this down. Go to a networking event and look around, you guys. Look around at the age group that's at a networking event. I have been to thousands of networking events, and I look around, and I never see a group of 18 to 25-year-olds there, ever. If I do, they're sitting in the front row with video cameras and phones out, capturing and digitizing every ounce of content that's at that event so they can go leverage it on the internet and make a bunch of money with it. They have no interest in talking to you if they're there. I promise you. You better figure the game out.
So everyone who's over 40 has to start thinking like a 15 to 18-year-old. And if we're talking to attorneys and chiropractors and people who are running businesses that are already established, it's how to start putting in place a plan of action to creating digital assets in a fashion that captures your current audience and who you want as your future customers as well.
Absolutely. And let me end. I'll end with this, Linda. There is power in something we use a term in the internet marketing space all the time that doesn't get enough play in the offline world. So I'm going to do a good job here, I think, of bringing this down to a level that everybody can understand. It is about creating joint ventures with people. How do you leverage somebody else's technology and network and let them leverage yours? It's about partnering with other folks and leveraging them. Remember back when I was talking about doing videos on people in your networking event? That's a joint venture, right? I'm leveraging Bob the Roofer's network by interviewing him so that when someone looks for Bob the Roofer, I show up. It's about creating those partnerships, figuring out who you can work with, whether they're a competitor or I call it co-opetition, right? I work with my competitors to leverage a bigger space of the market. So go out and figure out how to partnership with people, create a joint venture, which just means you are taking a venture and you're jointly promoting it, or you're jointly writing a book together, you're jointly doing videos together, so on and so forth, and leverage that for both of your networks, and everybody wins in a blue ocean environment versus a red sea of scarcity environment. So with that, I just want to say, Linda, I know we're coming up on the next hour. You guys will probably do the closeout, but if you're listening to me or this show, you guys, and you want to get in touch with Linda or Gina or myself, you can find them on their show. You can also go to connectwithcasey.com. We'll sit down and talk for an hour if you want. So here's all you have to do. Go to connectwithcasey.com. It's going to ask you on that form how we met. Just put Linda and Gina's radio show. The minute you click the button that says book it, it's a very simple, it's not even a big website, it's just your name, phone number, and email address so I know how to get a hold of you. Click book it. It's going to take you right to my calendar. Go pick a time that works for you. Put in your phone number, how you want me to contact you. Hit admit, submit, and it's done. Now, I'm scheduling all of you guys via Total Technology, totally automated, on your schedule, not mine. And that's one of the other big, powerful things that we didn't get a chance to talk to. Maybe we'll be able to do that next time. So, Gina, Linda, you two ladies are unbelievable. You rock, and I'm so honored to be in your space and play with you because I just love hanging with smart people.
And, Casey, we've got to talk. I'm doing a joint venture virtual workshop January 30th and 31st. I really want to get you to come in for at least an hour of that workshop to really talk about some of what you talked about today in a little bit more detail for our people.
Absolutely. I would be honored to.
I'll make sure I get in touch with you this week.
Thank Wonderful.
You so
Thank
much
you,
for
Casey.
Us.
Thank you for everything that you brought to our audience today. I know that this is going to become one of our evergreen shows that people are listening to over and over and over again. Everything from the strategy for their business, for their networking, for their digital assets, for their presence online, and how to systematize it in order to create leverage for themselves and their relationships. You touched on all of it, and I can't thank you enough for it. And look forward to having you back again to share more on Breakthrough Directions. Thank you, Casey. Thank you, everyone. See you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.